Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Fragrance of Humility, Session 5, God Resists the Proud. Again, as a little intro that we've been doing, kind of a reminder each week, we're doing this 8-week series talking about humility and the fragrance of humility, trying to become that fragrance, become ones who walk in a significant measure of humility. We've talked about the ways that people that are humble, they just have such a way about them that you want to be around them. You want to listen to them and confide in them. And there's a certain fragrance of Jesus in the earth through those that are humble. And we don't want to have stories only about, yeah, that one guy or gal I met that's humble. We want to be that one guy or gal. We want to figure out a way to embody humility. And so we've been doing this series in the hopes that it would be a constant conviction for a couple month period of time. That we're having this dialogue again and again. We're looking at Bible verses week after week. And that the hope is that it would sink in and begin to move on our own souls and call us into a greater measure. So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the opposite of humility, and therefore that'll kind of help us realize some of the value of humility. We're going to talk about pride, and specifically God resisting pride. And so we'll look at that, define that a little bit here in a minute, but I really just want to start with this. God really, really, really hates pride. He really, really doesn't like it. It's not his nature. It's not his character. It's actually the very sin that got Satan in trouble was pride. I mean, you want to get kicked out of heaven. You want to get kicked out of your eternal destiny. Operate in pride. It's something that he really doesn't like. It's like feedback on a microphone. And so I want to start off with this verse in James 4, 6. And James 4, verse 6 says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And so in this passage in James, I want us to hear those words as they kind of just hopefully will resound a little bit for us. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. What does it mean for God to resist the proud? What is that? Why would that even be in the Bible? That it's not just that God doesn't like it. It's that God goes about doing something to pride. He arms himself to deal with it. He resists pride or the proud. Well, my hope here is that by looking at a number of passages tonight that talk about pride and how God feels about pride, that we'd be able to search ourselves and see where this, evil little monster might be in our own midst, in our own hearts, in our own thought processes and attitudes, and to search ourselves so that we would seek to not be prideful people. The significance of pride, let's pull up that Romans verse, Romans 12, 16, is that we're supposed to identify it. You know, Paul says here, live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not be conceited. Do not be proud. Very similar thought processes. You know, Paul here, he's not necessarily focusing only on the do not associate with people of low position. That would be one way to show pride. But it's not the only way. There's about 1,000 ways to express pride. Paul here is addressing that particular issue, but it's a broad stroke statement about don't be a conceited person, don't be filled with pride, don't operate in a proud heart. And the only way that we could do that, the only way that we could not operate in pride, and especially the pride in our own life, is to have identified it first. And so what Paul's doing here is he's helping them to identify one area that he already knows is up and running, alive and well in their midst. And he's saying, I know a secret about you, church in Rome, that you've got this particular issue. And so he lists out that issue, but it's not about that issue. It's about pride that's That's one of the manifestations. And the only way that we can resist pride, or the only way we can turn away from pride or not be proud, not be conceited, is to have identified it in our own hearts and lives first. And so I'm hoping that the Holy Spirit tonight will illuminate, will open up our eyes to some of those areas that we experience, because pride shows itself in many ways. Well, another little kind of, you know, misnomer that I want to point out is that we sometimes have this, I don't know, this thought, especially when we read the word, and it talks about the proud. We kind of have this tendency to categorize everybody in humanity as in one group or the other group completely. You are either a proud person 100%, or you are a humble person 100%. And it's just not that way. There is no person who is 100% proud. Well, maybe the Antichrist, he'll probably be there. But everybody else operates in humility somewhere, somehow, at one point, for a second, once, you know? And then the other side, it's not that everybody who is even a super, you know, humble person that we would note, man, they are very humble, that they've never had a moment that they don't slip here and there in pride. See, because it's not just that one person is all this or is all that. It's that we have to constantly fight in our own souls for all the areas of life. And what's more likely is that everybody has some pride and everybody's got some humility. And what we want to do is we want to water the humble tree. All right, we want to figure out how to make that thing's roots grow deep, and we want to shrivel up the pride tree, and we want to get that shrunk out of our life as much as we can. I even recently, it was today, and I won't share the circumstances. There was a person that I respect, and I think of them as a very humble person, and they said some statements that were proud, and I found myself catching it and going, wow, that's kind of a prideful statement. And then I was thinking, I was like, how many times do I say prideful statements? I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm trying, Lord, I want to be humble, but I know I say these things. And that's just how it is. And so we want to catch those things, we want to deal with them. But I don't want us thinking that when the Bible says the Lord or God resists the proud, that that's some small percentage of humanity that are defined as the proud. There's only like, you know, 1 out of 100 is defined as the proud. It's actually defining characteristics, traits that people are operating in, that they could be anybody operating in that pride. Same thing with the humility. So with that, here's the issue. I think that is a better perspective to talk about God resisting pride within a person as opposed to God so mad at that individual that God is wholly against that person and wants to destroy them. Because the truth of the matter is, I know when I operate in pride, God is against that pride, but he still likes me. He is fully against that pride. He doesn't like it. He won't support it. He won't sign off on it. He is not excited about that pride, but he still fully loves me. But he is resisting that pride within me. And he's resisting that area of my life that I'm operating in pride. And so I want us to think about God resisting the sin in you, not you, the sin of pride, especially for the believer. But this is interesting because we have many areas of our life. And if God resists pride, you can be operating in humility in these 5 areas, or neutrality. Let's say you're not even so humble. Let's just say you're not doing anything super prideful, okay? You're just operating in neutrality in these 5 areas, and God is not resisting those. But if you've got an area where you are operating in pride, God is resisting that area of your life. It's interesting, because you can be like, and maybe nobody even knows about that area. Maybe nobody knows, or it's not as obvious, or it's only in certain circles does that particular area of pride show up, and God resists it. God resists pride. He hates it. It's almost like, you know, this series, we're calling it The Fragrance of Humility. It's almost like the fragrance of Satan. And I just imagine God smelling some stanky cologne on us. You know, he loves us. He delights in us. And then gets a whiff of that pride. And it's like, oh, I remember that smell. That's Satan right there. I remember him when he threw his coup upstairs. Man, it was bad deal. Like, just the fragrance of pride, of Satan, of his ways, and that God resists it. He hates it. Well, it's possible, therefore, to operate in many areas of our life with the blessing of God on us, with the favor of the Lord, because we're operating in humility. And remember, we started off the scripture, James 4:6, but God gives grace to the humble. He releases grace. You know, I've seen even in my own life, areas, times where I'm processing through something that I'm trying to overcome in pride. And maybe I'm not handling it so well. But in another area, I'm coming to the Lord with great sincerity. And I'm going, oh God, help me. And the Lord's releasing grace into that area of my life because I came to him in humility. You can be experiencing both the favor and the resistance of God in your life at the same time, because they can be different areas. Because one area is submitted to the Lord in the area of humility, and another area you're operating in pride, and God says, I'm not going to sign off on that pride thing. The Lord is the one who humbles, and he's the one who lifts up. I want to bring up this verse in 1 Samuel chapter 2, 6 through 7. God is watching over our lives, and he is the one who is in charge of raising us up, of bringing us down. He's the one in charge, and we really want to find ourselves on the right side of this equation. Let's read the verse. 1 Samuel 2, 6 through 7. The Lord brings death and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and raises up. The Lord sends poverty and wealth. He humbles and he exalts. So this is really good news for us, actually, because this means God is the one in charge. This means that the Lord in all the areas, whether alive or death, death or life, being brought up, being brought down, sending poverty, bringing wealth. God's in charge. And it's also God who exalts a person or who humbles a person, that we can submit our souls to him and know that he's going to be in charge, and that it's okay, that he's safe, that he's good, that he is the one who's the person who can lift us up out of our difficult circumstance. He's also the person who can bring difficult circumstances in order to humble us. Now, not every difficult circumstance is God trying to humble you, like directly because he really wants to beat something out of you. Though every time you go through a difficult circumstance, God will use it to beat something out of you if you submit to the process. The Lord is the one who's in charge. He's the one who exalts. He lifts up. He brings down. Well, I want to talk about that being God's role. He's the one. He's the judge in the area of humility, in the area of pride. He's the one that makes the decisions and the lifting up and the humbling. With that being the case, let's go back to the concept we started with. God resisting the proud. What does it look like for God to resist us? These are some heavy verses we're going to look at. These are verses that are just, I mean, they kind of make you quake a little bit on the inside, make your guts shake. Like, what does it look like for God to resist a person? Let's look. 1 Peter 5:5. It's possible that this is just a synonym for the word resist. But I don't know, I think of resist and oppose as different. 1 Peter 5:5, God opposes the proud. See, when I think about resist, I think about a bad guy coming into my house and I'm resisting him. Like he's the one, he's the assailant, he's coming at me and I'm like in defensive mode, you know? Or somebody's trying to do something I don't really want him to, I'm kind of like, no, like leave me alone, like lay off. I think about that even in the area of our intercession, where the word resist, where if we're operating in pride and we're coming to the Lord and we're talking to him and he's in resist mode, you know? Oh my goodness. You know, there have been days where my sweet wife maybe had a long day or whatever. I come over and try to kiss her on the cheek and she's not really ready for a kiss right then. She's had a rough day. And it's like, oh, I just come here, you. And it's just not the moment, you know? And I think about sometimes in our pride, us coming to the Lord, and the Lord is in that resist mode. He is resisting us because of the pride. And sometimes it's the reason that we don't feel close to him. Not all the time. Sometimes, though, because he's resisting us. But this word oppose, it's different. This to me, this is like an effort to thwart. This isn't just resist. This isn't not getting a kiss in the kitchen. I mean, this is thwarting. This is opposing. This is God saying to those that are operating in pride, coming against them, trying to thwart their efforts, trying to bring things to a point of difficulty. It's not just a passive resistance. It's an active opposition. Oh my gosh, the last thing I want in my life is for God to be against me. Oh, you know the song, you know the verse. You know, whom shall I fear? You know, if God is for me, who can be against me? What if God is against you? Who can be for you? What if God is against you, you got trouble. I mean, that's bad. Like, that's the last thing I want in my life in any area, to have God of the universe opposing me. But our Bible says it. And this is New Testament. This is Peter writing to the church. He's saying, God opposes the proud. All right, well, let's read some more. Let's talk about not just opposing. Let's talk about this term, brings down. That's just a bad sounding term. 2 Samuel 22:28. Your eyes, this is speaking about the Lord, your eyes are on the haughty to bring them low. So the haughty, those that are operating in pride, the way that they carry themselves, the way that they speak, the way that they interact in business and in relationships, the haughty. And God is communicating to us here through 2 Samuel. He's saying, you know how all those verses we've used around here for, you know, years about getting the Lord's attention in a special way, like getting his eyes on us, and the Lord's eyes pan throughout the earth to see if there are any who are fully committed to him, and catching his gaze, catching his attention. Say, oh, there's another way you can catch his attention. Operate in haughtiness, and he's gazing at you, but they're not happy eyes. It's those eyes of fire. He turned the light on. And now you got blazing eyes looking at you, and it's not ooey gooey, I love you. It's fire. It says, your eyes, they're fixed on the haughty. To do what? Bring them down. This is terrifying. That God would like sit in his chair and think up angry thoughts against the haughty. That God would like intentionally think about and aim and intend to bring down, to bring them low. Now, it's not mostly punitive. It's not mostly you're bad, I'm going to get you. It's most bring low, it's to humble. See, all the verses that talk about pride and humility, it says that the Lord will humble the proud. Well, the intention actually of bringing them low is to get them to be humble. God actually likes people so much that even the prideful, even you in your pride or the lost in their pride, he likes you so much, he's going to do bad things to you in order to get you to be humble. It's actually an intent to get you on the right side of the equation, but oh my gosh, there's a less violent path of least resistance, I promise. Your eyes are on the haughty to bring them low. All right, Isaiah 26:5. Let's talk about God leveling the lofty. I think about when I read this passage and the terminology, I just imagine, was it Paul Bunyan, the big dude with the big axe, you know? I just imagine him being, you know, twice the size of the tallest tree, and him coming with that axe, and there's like, I don't know, 100 pine trees all lined up, and he just... and just chop, 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 chop. And then they all at once, whoosh, and the whole forest falls. He just levels it in a moment. Look at this verse, Isaiah 26:5. He humbles those who dwell on high. He lays the lofty city low. He levels it to the ground and casts it down to the dust. The Lord is even willing to destroy a city over arrogance. Over haughtiness. So many times in the scripture you see cities personified by the predominant attitude of the city, of the people that live in the city. you know, there's a thing called Southern hospitality. Why? Well, because not every Southerner, but lots of Southerners, it's kind of a neat thing to be hospitable, and kind of we do that a little bit, you know. And you go to certain parts of the country, and there's certain kind of attitudes that are, you know, expressed as kind of a cultural norm. Well, God is not even unwilling. In fact, it says he will bring a city low. He'll lay it low. He'll decimate a city over the issue of haughtiness. I mean, if that to a city. Okay, so this idea of God bringing low a person, bringing low a city, him opposing pride, I want you to think about, what does it look like in a business, in a marriage, in a ministry, when the Lord, because he wants humility and he doesn't find it, is willing to bring it low in order to produce humility, humbling the exalted things, humbling arrogance, humbling pride. What does that look like when it happens to a person, a business, a ministry, a marriage, a relationship, an effort? It's just intense. I really want to be on the right side of this. Like, I'm only going to spend one session on the whole pride thing because I just want to keep talking about the other side the rest of this. But I want us to get this. Like, I want us to feel this. The Lord's just attitude, his violent desire for humility, so much so that he will bring down the high and lofty things. Look at this, Isaiah 13, verse 11. He puts an end to arrogance. Look at this. I will put an end to the arrogance of the haughty, and I will humble the pride of the ruthless. Oh my gosh. Again, I don't want to lose the power of the scripture by pinning this off on evil dictators only. This Bible verse only applies to Kim Jong-un. Like, you're just so bad, man. You just quit it. Quit being bad. Quit being ruthless. God's going to get you. I don't want to just make it about them. I want to make it about the areas of pride in my own life. I want to learn the lesson. The Bible wasn't written for the lost to have a care about it. I mean, the lost don't value the word of God at all. It's for the believer. And so, like, I don't want to lose the power of these scriptures by just thinking about what God's going to do to some evil overlord in a far, faraway country. I want to look at this and go, oh my gosh, it's like God's hunting for arrogance. It's like he smells it, and he's like a bloodhound trying to find it and end it. He hates it so much, he says, I'm going to end it. I'm going to end that arrogance. I want to feel about pride the way God feels about pride, so that when I start to feel pride, I might figure out a way to extinguish it quickly. I just don't think pride is so permissible in our culture, even in the church culture. It's so normal for people to operate with such an unhealthy level of pride, not that there's a healthy level, to operate in pride as just a cultural norm. It's like we just pat on the back, we just, oh, well, that's just how they are, that's just their way, that's just how they carry themselves. God says, I hate it. I hate pride. I hunt for it to end it. And I don't hate you, but I hate it in you. I hate it. And I want to end it. I want to deal with it. I like you so much, I promise to do terrible things to you to get that out of you. I will humble that area of haughtiness, of arrogance, of pride within you. I will humble it. Ooh. All right. Let's keep going. We've got here in Proverbs 3:34. He mocks proud mockers. Oh my gosh. Like, what a verse. God mocking. I just think about Andy's sarcasm and wit. I mean, this guy is funny. He often will have just the right, just funny little quip or whatever. I think about how much smarter God is than Andy and how much more clever he is. And I just think about God lined up against a mocker, against somebody who's just filled with haughtiness and just, you know, and got a mocking spirit. And God just, I mean, one-liner after one-liner.
you know? I mean, just zipping them out. It's like, how can you stand against God? But what a crazy verse. I just think about that, though, like, as odd of a phrasing is, that's like poetic and odd. Just the verb, the way that that's written is just odd to me. And yet, God wanted that in the Bible, and he had the wisest guy ever, Solomon, write it. That God mocks proud mockers. God mocks. What does it mean to mock? It's God laughing at, taunting, calling him out. I don't want to be called out. I don't want to be mocked by God. He brings disgrace on the pride. Look on the proud. Look at Proverbs 11, verse 2. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. I just want you to think about the one who's in charge of bringing the disgrace. You know, so often we think about, you know, well, if I say this, if you're in some sort of social environment where we're not super comfortable, we're trying to carry ourselves carefully because we don't want to get made fun of because we're, you know, not normally in that circle or whatever. And we think about the fear of disgrace, and we mostly think it's going to come from up here. God says, no, it will come from up here. I will be the one sending you the disgrace. I will bring it. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. I will see to it. I am in charge. I am the one who uplifts, and I am the one that humbles. I will bring disgrace. Oh my gosh. Like, hunted by God, my pride, hunted down by God. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. I've seen it a couple times in my life. I'm just grateful that the Lord has been merciful and that he has not treated me as my sins deserve, that he has not dealt with my pride probably to the degree that it's probably needed. I'm thankful, although I'm probably need it. I can think of some times, though, where I said something that was prideful and I got it. I mean, somebody called me out on it or something, and I was like, totally disgraced. You're like, well, you're supposed to be the, you know, the minister of this. And I'm like, I'm an idiot. I did it. Just line me up, put the dunce hat on me, whip me. Like, let's just, come on, let's go. What do we got to do here? How do we make this right? Like, just totally look so stupid. And oh my gosh. And the Lord, he says he's the one. He'll bring the disgrace. Proverbs 18:12 says, before a downfall, the heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor. Pride results in a downfall. Now, the good news is the Lord, he's just so kind. Oh my gosh, he's so kind. The word says that we're supposed to be patient with one another. And so that means we don't bring a level 10 rebuke for the first time somebody does something, you know? And the Lord is the one that invented that system of mercy, and so he's even way nicer than we could ever be. So the issue of pride, it's not you're prideful in 1 second, and then all of a sudden you're going to have a downfall. It's a theme. It's progressive. It builds. It snowballs. And then, therefore, the downfall at any moment could actually be cut out of the equation. You could actually avoid the downfall at any point by just entering back into humility, because the other side of the equation is, but humility comes before honor. You want to be honored? Operate in humility. You want a downfall? Just hold your head up high. Keep being prideful and arrogant. You'll get there. You'll get your downfall any day now. Man. Well, let's look at some sources of pride. 1 Corinthians 13:4, pride does not come from love. Now, when we operate as believers, we, you know, in our relationships and all that, we want to operate in love. We want to be those that are marked by love. It just feels better to be loving, doesn't it? I mean, when we're operating in unlove, doesn't that just feel dirty? I mean, even if we felt justified for doing it, the feeling that we have actually isn't a good feeling. Even justification, even that, you don't feel good. You just, you feel dirty and
I don't know, write about it. It's like, I'm dirty and happy. I'm so happy I'm dirty right now. Like, but when we operate in love, it just feels better. It's because God is love. So we're supposed to be like him. We're supposed to operate in love. And pride doesn't come from from love. 1 Corinthians 13, 4. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. So when we are proud in our relationships, in our interactions, in our whatevers, we just have to identify the source ain't love. It is not love. That comes from someplace else. Let's look at 1 John 2, 15 through 17 describes this a little bit better. 1 John 2, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. So this is, again, another subject about love and defining love and the motives of love and the attitudes of love. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. You want to know where pride comes from? It comes from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. Worldly desires, that's what's actually driving pride. It's comparison. It's a desire for promotion. It's a feeling of superiority. It's desire for exaltation or self-exaltation, longing after fame and men's approval, men's esteem, entitlement. It actually comes from the world. These desires, they don't come from love. They don't come from God. They come from the world. I mean, yes, Satan can kind of help it along and encourage those things in us, but we pick them up just by going outside the doors. We pick up the seeds of pride in the world because it comes from the world. These longings and these desires, they come from us watching how others are treated and go, well, I'm not going to be treated that way. Therefore, I'm going to stand like this. They come from infringement of rights. And it's all the opposite stuff of humility. It's all the opposite. It's me, mine, I. It says it actually comes from the world. I just put this in there. It doesn't really fit in the study, really. I just put it in there because I kind of want it to bother you like it bothered me. Pride is the language of the Antichrist. Let's read it. Revelation 13, 5. The beast was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and to exercise its authority for 42 months. Like, why is that what is said about this man? He was given a mouth. Well, I would hope so. He's human. He was given a mouth for a purpose, okay? Isn't that to, like, draw men, you know, to, you know, follow after Satan and all that? Yes. But specifically, the on-ramp to get there is to utter proud words. Pride. The Antichrist will be the most anointed proud talker there ever was. He's given a mouth for pride. And again, it doesn't really fit in our study. I'm bothered by that. I'm like, I don't want to speak the language of the Antichrist. I don't want to be anything like that man. And that man is like proud to the core, pride incarnate. He was given a mouth to utter proud things. Ugh, I don't want to be like that. Well, let's come up with some safeguards. We'll finish up here in just a few minutes. This pride thing, it's a lot more tricky than many overt sins. This is just my opinion. Because it can mask itself as so many things and so remain in the dark. There's so much about pride that you could start a homeless ministry and the whole reason you're doing it is because you want to look good in front of people. And so no one would ever know, unless you showed your cards a little bit, that the entirety of your whole life was actually based on pride and not on mercy deeds, even though you do mercy deeds. See? I mean, it's a lot different than like sexual immorality, which is kind of pretty obvious. It's like if once somebody, well, you, okay, well, then you did, you are. But pride, it can hide behind anything. It can hide behind a microphone. Maybe my motives really for being a preacher is I just want people to talk to. I want everybody to think I'm awesome. You don't know the pride. You don't know the motives of a person's heart. And so pride's tricky because it's one that, like, you need to do some significant, like, introspection inside. Yeah, just do that. I'm a mess. That you need to, like, really look within and identify, what are my motives? Why am I this way? Why do I say that? Why do I do this? Why do I act this way? Why do I respond that way when that happens? Because it can hide. And God makes a really big deal about how much he opposes pride, but pride is one of the tricky sins and it can hide in you. So it's kind of a problem. It's kind of a big deal because you don't wear pride necessarily. Some acts of pride are pretty obvious, but not all of them. Lots of motives can be rooted in pride. And nobody really knows except you, and it just requires you being very real with God. I think about the subject of pride fighting as like one of the greatest ways to keep real and deep and honest relationship with Christ. Because it's a battle you got to fight on your own. Others can tell you that you've made mistakes, but you don't have to own up to those if you don't want to. I mean, this issue of pride, to know how God feels about it with just an aggressive disdain for pride, to know that and then to go on the search to find pride inside. I'll give you a couple of starting points here. What do we need to do? I don't want to let pride have any place in my life. I don't want it to fester. I don't want it to have a root system. I don't want it to even get started. I want to deal with it. When I sense it in myself, when I feel it, I want to safeguard myself from this thing that God hates that I don't want in me at all. So what does that look like? Well, first is pray for help. Lord, show me my pride. That's a great prayer to pray. Just work it into your every other day rotation or something. Like, show me my pride, because more than likely, it's at the door. And if you're not operating in full-blown pride today in some area, it's trying. Because you pick it up when you go out there. It's from the world. So pray, Lord, help me. Help me to walk in humility. Help me resist pride. Help me see my pride. Get God involved in the conversation. Part of the reason you really want the subject of God, show me my pride, part of the reason you want that as a real part of your life is because if you've already started the conversation at that level, it will be far easier for your soul to go to the next point of the conversation, which is addressing the pride when you actually do identify it. If you're unwilling to start the conversation, God, show me my pride, that might actually be pride. Because you might actually be trying to keep something hidden. We were talking about it's a sin that hides. And if you go, God, shine the giant God flashlight into my soul and show me my pride, he might find some. There might be some in there. And you might be so not wanting to deal with that that you might not even be willing to bring up the subject at the initial entry-level conversation with the Lord. And I think that it's scary. I think it's a safeguard to pray, show me my pride. Help me live humble. Help me love humility. Help me hate pride. Help me feel about pride the way you feel about pride. Show me my pride. Show me my pride. Show me my pride. That is a great starting point. That's so safe. If we can be a people that live like that, that we pray that when no one's looking. I don't mean you do it in front of your spouse or in front of your whatever. I mean, when it's you and God, if you're real, show me my pride. I think we'll all make it. I think we'll be okay. Because if we'll start there and stay there, then when the Lord does show us our pride,
nine times out of ten, we'll probably deal with it as opposed to run, because we're like, I guess I did ask for this, didn't I? And not only that, then you start to feel the kindness and the gentleness, the tenderness of the Lord in the ways that he deals with us, because he doesn't deal with us like an angry father. He deals with us in love and tenderness. Though he hates the sin within us, he's even kind in his surgery of removing. He's so kind and gentle. And if we can begin that process, we will live a life where we're uprooting and dealing with our pride all the livelong day. So first is pray. Second is identify. Some things you can identify just from knowing the Bible. Identify from your own spikes, what is the thing? I don't know, that's a rough day for me, folks. Just rough. So when somebody's on life support and it's on the monitor and it's showing the heart rate and, you know, whatever else, some of the spikes are a little higher, you know, in our life, and we can identify, ooh, yeah, that was pride. That was something. I shouldn't have said that. As long as I'm here, I'm okay. But when something spikes real high, I just know, gosh, I really should not have said that. I should not have done that. I need to go and make that right. There are areas where we're able to identify, and I just want to encourage us, because the alternative starts to get really, really, really ugly. I want to encourage us to identify our own pride, because we're going to talk about the alternative in a minute, and it's so bad. It's so bad. So first is, this is the safest way. It's sweet humility. Identify your own pride, and if you're praying, Lord, show me my pride, then you will be increasingly more clever at identifying where it's sneaking around. You'll be able to see it more clearly. The Lord will give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation to identify the pride in your own heart. And you can self-identify and self-medicate. You can deal with it, okay? I promise you this, with the area of pride, this is the path of least resistance. Identify it yourself. You start the conversation. All right, well, let's keep going. What about when someone else addresses an area of pride in us? This is uncomfortable. I just don't know that there's a person in the earth that can receive a correction about pride and feel joy in the moment. You can do right. You can submit to it, but it is uncomfortable. Like, hey, you're really arrogant. This thing that you said, you're like, boop, and maybe they even cuss at you. It's like, I am so offended right now. How dare you tell me I'm prideful? It's like, oh, that. I guess I am, actually, because I'm right now I want to kill you. I feel like murder. I've never felt like murder before, but I mean, a minute ago I was fine, but now I feel murder in my heart right now. Cain and Abel, must have been something just like this. Talking about the dude's vegetables. Okay, I get it. All right, let's deal with it. Right now. It's like, man, when somebody calls out pride in us, it's uncomfortable, and now the issue has escalated. It'd have been just fine if you'd have dealt with that by yourself, but you didn't. You needed a friend. And wounds from a friend can be trusted, but them bruises still hurt. And so here it is. You find yourself now in a war in your soul to not prove them right in that moment. You're really prideful. You've got this issue in your life. Let me tell you something, son. Man, we gotta do everything we can to fight it. And it's like, the difficulty level just went up 10 notches. It was just me and Jesus in a quiet time, just dealing with my pride. And now you had to come and get involved. And it's actually the mercy of God. It's one of the kindest things someone can do for us. Because it's violent. I mean, they know what they're doing. They probably had somebody do it to them before and knew it wasn't awesome and super encouraging. And it's so, so good for us. It's the mercy of the Lord. Because there is a third party who can come and bring it up. If you don't bring it up, and they don't bring it up, it's going to be brought up. There's only one person left.
And he's really passionate about it. So when it comes up, I just want to say it's still good, still all right. You just got to figure out a way to kind of bring it down a little bit and just promise in your soul you're not going to fight that person that's actually trying to help you. They care about you, probably more than most people ever, because they were willing to warn you about a poison you were drinking. And everybody else just patted you on the back and said, just drink up. So they're actually, it is an incredible kindness. It's true love expressed when someone comes and deals, helps you with your sin, exposes something, whether it's pride or pick a poison. It's actually kindness. It's love. It is love. We need to listen when others identify our pride. It's double hard, but we must listen. We need to welcome correction. We actually need to welcome correction. I would encourage you, this is next level praying, Lord, let people around me that love me enough come help me see my pride that I can't see. I mean, doesn't that sound like a prayer a humble person would pray? But it's pretty violent. It's about as violent as it gets. Because it's going to happen. Because God answers prayers. And I kind of feel like he's just sitting at the edge of his seat waiting for someone to pray that one. Like, give me $1 million. Do you know how many times I've heard that this week? Lord, let people in my life bring up the areas of my pride. Oh, I hadn't heard that one in 200 years. I am all over that. Because before the day is out, you will have 5 friends. They will help you. I love you. I'd like for you to be humble. We need to listen when others identify our pride. I just want to tell you this, and this is straight talk, okay? You are in danger if you are unapproachable about this. If you have insulated yourself so well that your friends, people that love you, they don't feel comfortable coming up and talking to you because they know that you are going to respond in a way that proves them right. You've insulated yourself and protected yourself to remain prideful and to go even next level in pride. That is a dangerous place to be. It is dangerous to be unapproachable on this subject. God hates pride. And the reason he wants to deal with the pride is actually so that he can bless you, because he gives grace to the humble, but he doesn't give grace to the proud. And if you're operating in pride, there's all kinds of blessings God wants to give you that he can't because of his kingdom ordinances. And the only way for him to get you those blessings is to bring you into humility. And if you can't let your friends, if you can't let those close to you address pride in your life, you want to start there with your areas of prayer. If you are dealing with defensiveness, if you're unapproachable, you are actually helping Satan with Satan's plans for your life. I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there. I just want to be able to receive correction. I want to deal with my pride. I like you guys enough. I want you to deal with yours. I don't love having to be one from time to time that has to come help you with it, but I will. You know, you don't love it when you got to come to me, but I'm grateful that you're willing. Man, we have to lovingly call one another out. I just want to say this. It's important that we love each other enough to help each other. If you had $100 and your friend, anybody in this room needed that $100, and you did, you had it, you would help them with the $100. This is more severe than that. It's way, way bigger than $100 or $1,000 or $10,000. This is way, way bigger. It's way bigger. But we've got to be willing to help one another in this area. As we sense pride and pick a sin, but we're in this study on pride and it's a big deal, that we'd be willing to address it in those that we love. And that we would do it tenderly, because just know how you would feel if somebody came and addressed it in you. How would be the best way for you to deliver that message? Yeah, I mean, we're doing an 8-week study on humility here. This was going to get messy from the start. Like, we set ourselves up here. Let's talk about humility for 8 weeks. I'm sure that'll come out okay and our skin will be unscathed. Whatever. Like, we set ourselves up to, like, jump into a fiery furnace here. And so I just want to encourage us, hunt it out in your own life. Welcome it from a friend. And just know that the Lord's desire is actually to bring grace to the humble. You can either choose humility or he can help you get there. He likes you so much, he's committed to the process.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.